Sweet friends, this episode of the DTFH is not sponsored by ramdas.org, but my soul is, which is why I want to announce that they're having this really cool thing called Freedom from Anger, Fear, and Separateness, How to Transform Suffering and Befriend Your Difficult Emotions. It's a virtual event. It's happening Wednesday, January 17th. You can sign up for it by going to ramdas.org. Links will also be in the comments section of this episode. Greetings to you, O Holy One. I bow and kiss your feet, giving you great thanks for visiting the Sonic Hut, known as the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast, an acoustic protuberance rising out of the trembling ocean of the internet. I offer unto you all the flower petals in my flower petal forest and throw them upon your glorious brow in thanks for shining the lantern of your attention upon the painted wall of the cavern that is this podcast. It is my wish that by listening to this podcast, you summon the nearest forest wizard to your home, and that he blesses you, allowing you to have mind-bending orgasms that force you to reconsider every single thing you thought about the reality of the universe that you are in. May this podcast drive the suckling, trembling, quivering, jelly-like, putrefying demons that have attached themselves to the nipples of your heart out of your ears, flying back into hell from whence they came, and may the void created by their exit be filled with angelic beings of light. Welcome, friend, to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast. Hello. Boy, we got a great episode for you today, man, but wow, this one was tough. I actually thought for a second, you know what? I don't know if I can release this. Like, I can talk about a lot of stuff on this podcast, very personal things. If you've been listening for a while, you know that I don't hold back much. But talking about guys, come on. I just needed you for the intro. Beat it. Please. Get the fuck out of here. Please. Thank you. But talking about jealousy, man, it's a tough one to admit that I have had a problem with jealousy in relation. Guys, seriously, get the fuck out of here. We're done. Jealousy. It's hard for me to talk about the struggles that I've had with jealousy on this podcast, or to anyone in general, because it's something that I'm embarrassed to admit. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be too embarrassed, because when you go to Google and you type in, is she, you get, is she cheating, is the second result. The first one is she for keeps? The third one is she gone pop lyrics? The fourth one, is she the one? The fifth one, is she a noun? Is she a pronoun? Is she into me? Is she cheating on me? Is she pregnant? And if you go to Google and you type in, is he, you get, is hepatitis curable? Well, fuck. Is heaven real? That's the second. Third, is he cheating? This is a plague on the minds of so many people who otherwise would probably be enjoying a wonderful time with whoever it is that they were deciding to partner up with. But man, when the virus of jealousy infects your brain and suddenly you start wondering and thinking and ruminating, and then you look at their phone and you're like, what's in there, man? I want to take a look. And you just go down a dark, embarrassing, schlocky, ego-ridden rabbit hole, which is a rabbit hole that I've gone down so many times. And I just, guys, please, I'm begging you, stop playing that fucking thing, man. One of the answers I've come up with is, well, I just won't be monogamous anymore. I'm not going to create some kind of rule structure that is going to make me feel like I have to play relationship cop and monitor the person I'm with and wonder if they're cheating on me or not. This stuff has really been on my mind lately, and so I called up my friend Chris Ryan, and he was kind enough to drive down from Topanga and be my therapist for an hour. I hope you get something out of this episode. If you're somebody who struggles with jealousy or monogamy or cheats on people or has been cheated on, I think you're going to really like this conversation. We're going to jump right into it, but first, some quick business. This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by HelloFresh.com. For $30 off your first week of HelloFresh, Go to HelloFresh.com and enter in Duncan30. Ye who have not gotten stoned and watched a cooking show, throw the first spatula. Because I know that I have gotten stoned and watched cooking shows. And as I've watched, I've thought to myself, you know what? If I had all the ingredients measured out for me, yeah, I could probably be a master chef too. And this, my sweet darlings, is where HelloFresh comes to the rescue. HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking more fun so you can focus on the whole experience, not just the final plate. Each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone, from novices to seasoned home cooks, short on time. HelloFresh sources the freshest ingredients, measured to the exact quantities needed, so there's no food waste. And HelloFresh employs 2 full-time registered dietitians on staff who review each recipe to ensure it is nutritionally balanced. And it's less than $10 a meal. I felt like I was Wolfgang Puck because of HelloFresh. It's amazing. It worked. I made this delicious, exotic Thai bowl. It was so good. I don't promote anything on this podcast that I don't love, and HelloFresh is fantastic. For $30 off your first week of HelloFresh, all you got to do is go to HelloFresh.com and enter in Duncan30. That's HelloFresh.com, Duncan30. HelloFresh, delicious meals for less than $10 each. Much thanks to the 730 of you who have subscribed over at patreon.com/DTFH. If you're out there and you're like, man, I don't want to listen to any more of your commercials, dude, there's a way for you to escape. And that's by going to patreon.com/DTFH and signing up. You will get ad-free episodes. It's just whenever I record an interview, I upload it on Patreon, and that's it. Also, what you'll get is opening rambling rants and monologues that I'm afraid to put on the main feed. There's one up there right now that's almost an hour long. So if you want to dig deeper into the DTFH, won't you please head over to patreon.com/DTFH and subscribe. It's a great way for you to support this podcast while getting the souls of your ancestors out of the burning, boiling pits of hell. Also, thanks to those of you who continue to use our Amazon link. Sometimes I get emails from people saying I can't find the link. It's because there's an ad. If you have an ad blocker, you can't see it. And I know asking somebody to take their ad blocker off is very similar to asking somebody to take their clothes off in front of you or something. So I get it. I don't blame you for not doing it. But if it occurs to you and you happen to be going through to Amazon, turn your ad blocker off. Go to DuncanTrussell.com. There's an Amazon link there. Click on that. Anything you buy, they give us a very small percentage of. And unless you're some kind of interdimensional traveler or somebody who has access to a immune system from the future, I wouldn't step foot in a chain store with the type of flu that is rampaging through our planet right now. Do you really want to cough up chunks of your lungs onto your kitchen floor? Do you really want to fall down on your way to the bathroom and shit your pants and have a seizure? Hell no. But that could happen if you go to a chain store and get sneezed on by a pox-ridden toddler. Don't do that. Just go to Amazon.com. Anything you want is there. Toilet paper, Windex, voodoo dolls. It's all at Amazon.com. But do click through the link at DuncanTrussell.com first, won't you? We also have a store with t-shirts, posters, and stickers at DuncanTrussell.com. All right, without further ado, please welcome back to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, the host of the Tangentially Speaking podcast, the author of the critically acclaimed book, Sex at Dawn, and a really good friend of mine, Dr. Chris Ryan.
It's the Duncan Trussell
Chris, welcome back to the DTFH, man. Thank you for coming all the way out here from... We should just do this for an hour. Sound check just for an hour to pitch.
Just lots of opening dialogues. Yeah. Great to be here. Are we doing this? Is this real now?
This is it. Sorry, guys. We just had to do like a bunch of sound checks. Man, it's great to see you. And I just want to jump right in because I know you got to get back and put this tarp over your over place because we're about to get a fucking massive storm.
Yeah.
But I just want to ask you, what is it that you like the most about sex?
We're jumping right in the deep end, huh?
Yeah.
I would say, you know, if I answer that personally, what I like personally most, in other words, what I take from it myself is a sense of sort of mental relaxation, similar to the feeling I get when, like, I'm watching waves roll in and smash against rocks, or I'm in a storm. You know, that sense of, like, being in the presence of a natural force that cleans your brain, sort of cleanses all the bullshit out of your brain, which, you know, nature. So sex to me is sort of a portal into nature and the animalistic sense of humanity, and I don't mean that in a negative sense at all, quite the opposite, actually. I mean it in a very positive sense, because it's the part where we're not, where experience isn't being filtered through symbols, it's not coming through someone else's bullshit, you know, lexicon. There's no language, it's pre-linguistic, it's just what it is in all its essence. So that's, I mean, personally, for me, it's like a meditative thing. It's a cleansing, like, check out and just be, like, dreaming, you know? You're not sort of saying, well, tonight I'm going to dream about this and that. It, you just dream. It just happens. So I like that. I also like the way that you can connect with another person on levels that otherwise aren't accessible. I like, I mean, my MO sort of has been... Like, I'm the you know, you called me the shame exorcist a few years ago, which, and I've sort of been doing that in my sex life for 20 or 30 years, where what I really like is helping a woman sort of shed fears and shame about the way she feels and know that she's in a place where she can be honest and I'm not going to judge her, you know, run around telling my friends her secrets or any shit like that. So that, personally, that's what I like. As far as, like, on a global, a larger level, I had this experience, and I don't know if you and I have ever spoken about this. At this point, like, what I've said on podcasts and what I say to my friends is all just blurred and...
muddied up. Same here, man.
Yeah, it's. I mean, like, you and I, probably 80% of our conversations have been in front of microphones.
I know.
So it's hard to remember where it's... But anyway, the first time I had a three-way... I was in this bar in Barcelona, and my buddy's a jazz musician. He plays upright bass. So I was there watching him play in this bar, and this woman sat next to me, and we started chatting. And I'd seen her around, but we hadn't really spoken much.
American?
I think so. Yeah, she was definitely an expat. She wasn't Spanish, but I don't remember if she was American or Canadian or whatever, but English. She spoke English. So... we got into, you know, because I was doing my dissertation about human sexuality. So I sort of got into sexual conversations pretty quickly with people. And she was telling me about, you know, she'd always had a fantasy of being with two guys and it had never sort of happened and, you know, whatever. And I said, well, what do you think of that bass player there? And she's like, oh, he's cute. And I said, well, I could talk to him, you know. If you're into it.
You didn't know him?
Oh, no. He was my buddy.
Oh,
I was
gotcha.
There to see him play. Yeah. So she was like, hell yeah. So anyway, he came over and we chatted a little bit. And then she was like, I'm going to let you two talk. I'm going to the bathroom. I'll be back. And he's like, what was that? Like, let you two talk. And I was like, well, listen, here's the deal. She wants to be with two guys. She's never done it. She thinks you're cute. What do you think about this? Would you be up for this? And he was like, dude, I'm straight. And I'm like, yeah, me too. And he's like, all right, just so we're not, you know, nobody's going to be grabbing balls by accident here. And so we went back to my place. And the first thing, this is a long time ago, but the things that stand out in my memory are, first of all, that she was really like concerned that neither one of us would feel left out. And I was struck by that. So like if she and my friend were sort of really getting into it, she would like reach out for me, like, hey, where are you? I don't want you to feel left out, you know?
Right.
And so I was struck by that because I was not feeling left out. I was feeling something very surprising for me. First of all, it wasn't like a porn kind of thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't like fucking
yes.
tits and cunting. It wasn't like that at all.
Right.
In fact, it was, I remember going over to change the music, and then I just sort of hung out and I was rolling a joint and I was watching them. So they're about, I don't know, 10 feet away from me, and they're fucking and I'm watching and rolling this joint. And so I felt totally comfortable being naked for the first time in my life.
That was the first time you've ever been naked like that in front of...
With other people and feeling comfortable. Yeah. And...
That's cool.
The second thing I felt, and it's very related, is that they trusted me so much that they were comfortable having this really intimate experience, being vulnerable to me. Like, I'm watching these people, their asses and their, you know, everything flying around and all, and they're like, doesn't matter. Chris is cool. He's not going to judge us. We can just do this. That made me feel loved. It made me feel accepted and trusted. And so what I ended up feeling from this experience was not really very erotic. It was about affection and trust and love and community and intimacy in a not particularly erotic way.
Well, define erotic to me. Well, what does erotic mean to you?
Like, it's not, that's not a scene I ever think about when I'm jerking off.
Right. Right.
It's more about love than it was about sex.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I really think looking... Let me just make this point. I think looking back that's the moment when Sex at Dawn was born. And that was like... This was in the like late 90s or something. So a good 12 years before Sex at Dawn came out.
Wow.
But that's when I first started thinking, wait a minute. Sex isn't really necessarily about getting off. It can just be about being friends.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a way of expressing vulnerability and trust with other people.
Yeah. Yeah. But I want to talk to you about this sort of division between sex and love.
Right.
And how tragic that division is, because my, you know, recently, I'm trying to think of a way to say this without like, I'll just, at one point recently, I experienced what I would call a sort of healing.
Right.
That happened by being with someone who was incredibly comfortable with sex and was showing me sex in the way that you're talking about, which is this with just love and like getting past all the hangups that I had about it and have had about it. And it was just what you're saying in a different way, which is like, whoa, this is like, I wouldn't, it was certainly erotic, but it definitely wasn't like porn.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like some kind of like trashy, I don't know, gritty, like
shameful,
shadowy thing.
Yeah.
That's the best way to put it. It wasn't shadowy.
Right.
It was just light.
Right.
And sweetness and connection. And it was beautiful. And it was revelatory for me, because you realize, oh, this is actually what it's about. If it's about anything, this must be more it. Not that the shadowy stuff isn't delightful in its own way. It's just something about that is like, I don't know how to put it without like sounding like I'm shaming it, and I don't want to. It's just, that's a different kind of fuel or something. Whereas this was healing or something like that. And it's blown my mind, man. It's blown my mind, because I think most people's experience with sex, if you're not lucky, enough to be a Chris Ryan, if you're not lucky enough to have like pulled yourself out of the confines of what you've been taught about what love means, which is me, you, that's it. Just me and you forever and ever, on and on, you and me, no one else. Who called? What was that text from? Who just texted you? Who just texted you? Chris, your phone just dinged. Who just texted? What was that? There it goes again.
It's your phone.
Who, I know. I'm trying to blame it on you. Who's texting you? What's going on here? What is this? Who's text? So it's like, that's been my experience. Because yeah. In the past, I've been on all sides of it.
Yeah.
I've been jealous. I've been a receiver of jealousy. I've been cheated on. I've never cheated because I got cheated on when I was very young and it hurt me so bad I couldn't do it again. So to experience like sex that with someone who had overcome all the stuff attached to sex. I mean, this person did say to me at one point, the sweetest thing is we're like holding each other. She said to me, doesn't this just feel good? Two people touching each other. Isn't this wonderful? Just two people touching each other. And she's like, we don't know each other. You know, but doesn't this feel so good? Mm. Cutting through all the like bullshit and bringing it into the moment, out of my head, straight into this moment of like, yes, this is really beautiful and perfect and wonderful. And there's nothing about this that is shameful. And there's nothing about this that is like dangerous or dark or anything. And I know many of you listening right now probably don't think that, but I know some of you do. When you start getting with someone, there's all this other shit attached to it. You know, there's all this stuff, this inevitable stuff that gets like wrapped up in it, even if you don't want it to be there. Because it seems to me that in the same way, like there's the practice of meditation, it seems like there must also be the practice of this kind of sex that you're talking about. You don't just pull it off right away. Mm. Am I off on that?
No, I mean, I had to go through a long process of deprogramming, I guess, is one way of putting it. I didn't grow, and I had it easy because I didn't grow up in a religious tradition where I was being, you know, force-fed a lot of shame around sex. But still, I was American. You know, I was, my first sort of exposure to sex was in Playboy and Penthouse magazines and, you know, with certain perspective on what women were and what sex was and what kind of woman was, you know, desirable. And I mean, one of the reasons I traveled so much when I was young is that I just felt like I needed to just get away from the sort of home-cooked meals, you know? I needed to get out and see other ways of looking at things.
Right.
And the ways other people experience their lives before I could figure out what really made sense. And sexually, that was a big part of it. But, you know, you talked about, like, sex and love, and then we're talking also about different kinds of love, right? Like, you can love someone in a moment with no expectation that it's going any further than that.
Yes.
You know, I often think about, and I think we might have talked about this, you and I, in the past, like two kinds of infinity. Like the one is horizontal infinity, which is the way, you know, time goes forever and this will always be. But there's another kind of infinity, which is just when you're so in this moment that time ceases to exist.
Yes.
And I think of that as a vertical infinity, you know? And so, I mean, I had a girlfriend when I was a teenager who said she'd love me forever. And when we broke up, I was like, that bitch lied.
Yeah.
You know, but I knew she wasn't lying. I knew she meant it when she said it. So I thought about that for a long time. And then I was like, wait a minute, it's a different kind of infinity. In that moment, she loved me forever.
Yeah.
And I loved her forever.
Like that moment is forever. That moment still exists in time. It happened. It's like a star that's glowing in the time space.
And it was so intense
that
you weren't looking at your watch. You weren't thinking, I'm only 16. What do I know? Yeah. You know, you weren't observing yourself living the moment. You were living the moment. the observer was gone for just an instant.
Yeah.
You know, which gets back to like the cleansing aspect of it.
It's cleansing.
But also touch. I mean, when you were talking about when she said, doesn't this feel good? And we don't really know each other. I think the other thing that we Americans mix up, and I think this whole issue is very much about mixing up our concepts. And one of them is we mix touch and sex. Because the only time that we really touch other people generally is in a sexual context, right? Unless you're like doing massage a lot.
Yeah.
And if you're doing massage, people get turned on. Why do they get turned on? Because they're not getting touched enough, right? So I think as a culture, we're touch starved.
Yeah.
And there's all sorts of psychological research on this and the repercussions, and it messes us up. It really messes up brain development. Neurogenesis happens when we're touched.
Right.
Our skin is directly related to every other part of our nervous system. That's our biggest organ, our skin. And so the deficit of touch hurts us deeply. And so I think a lot of people who are considered sex addicts, if they were getting enough just touch, just embrace, just, you know, caressed and stroked and, you know, just feeling hands on their bodies, their sexuality would be much healthier.
Well, yes. It's the problem is when that starts happening with some people, I guess, if you start wanting it to last forever.
Right.
And because you want it to last forever, you start building walls around it. Because you're afraid that somebody is going to come and take away this beautiful nectar that you've been longing for so long. And so when that's where all of the problems start, that's where the jealousy comes. That's where the suspicion comes. And it's so tragic. It's such a tragic, tragic, tragic thing. Because all the person has done is given you something sweet.
Right.
And in return, what you're giving back is a handcuff.
Well, think about what we do with young women, you know, guys 16, 17, you know, right up to, you know, their 50s and 60s are desperately trying to get women to give them pleasure, right? Sexual pleasure.
Yeah.
Then she gives it to you, and you turn around and call her a whore, right? All these high school girls, slut shame. It's like, this guy is begging me for this. I give it to him. You'd think it would make him happy, and he turns around and calls me a whore and talks shit about me.
I don't know even when. As I think back to when did it start? Like, when did I get jealous? Like, why have I been in this stupid trap? In so many different ways.
I think it's the nuclear family, honestly. I think as babies, we come to believe that there is basically one source of affection in our lives. You know, mom, maybe dad. If dad's affectionate, most dads aren't when they're even around. Most dads aren't very physically affectionate.
Yeah.
So you've got one source of affection. One sun in the sky.
Right.
And man, you know, as a baby, if that disappears, you're dead.
Fuck.
You're gone. You're lost. That's all you got. It's all your eggs in that one basket. And so we grow up with the sense that there's one man, one woman for us.
Wow.
You grow up in a hunter-gatherer society where that parenthood is dispersed.
Crazy.
Then it's like everything else. It's a scarcity-based system.
You know what it is?
Abundance.
I think I'm opening up to. I can't believe I'm saying this. I think I'm opening up too much on this podcast, but I'll tell you, man.
You can edit it.
Me and my brother. So this is. I'll tell you this. Fuck, man, you're blowing my mind here. I've thought of this before, but I forgot. My mom. Wonderful human being. But I remember she would only be loving to either me or my brother. She never loved us both at the same time. Like, if she would be mad at my brother and love me, or she'd be mad at me and love my brother. Mm-hmm. It was very rare for there to be, you're both okay.
Really?
That's it.
Huh.
So I probably, as a kid, was always like jealous for my mom's affection.
Right.
And then that just, of course, converted. Oh, God damn right. it. How embarrassing.
That's not embarrassing, dude. That's, it's beautiful that you're seeing that.
Yeah, so now it's like that has translated to like many jealous relationships.
Right, a lot of hostility toward other men around that woman, probably. Yeah.
Or just a general sense of like, yeah. Like, yeah, that you, instead of thinking the logical thing, which would be, if I like this person, other people will like this person.
Yeah.
And if they're just like me for liking this person, and why would I own this person? And why would I want to keep this person from love? Anyway, man, that's pretty mind-blowing. I hope I'm not being too intimate here. This is so weird. I've never in my life felt like, usually with a podcast, I'm just, I think like, I just had a kind of like mind-blowing experience with someone who like completely opened me up. And now I'm all like, a couple reasons I wanted to do the podcast with you. One of them is, I just had this like, and it's so embarrassing. I guess I'm hung up about sex.
Yeah.
But it's so embarrassing to say, because it sounds so cheesy. But I just had this kind of healing experience with sex.
Hmm.
And it's caused me to like, I'm flabbergasted, to be honest. I'm flabbergasted. So it's caused me to be kind of like completely like confused. And I keep looking back and thinking about past relationships and the way that I acted and the way that I've been. And it's incredibly confusing. Yeah. So it's wonderful to like work this out with you.
I'm so glad that happened for you, man. But you know, I mean, I've known you how long? 4 years?
Yes.
Something like that. And over those years, I've seen you working hard on this, you know? And I'm a real believer that when you, you know, I'm sure you know who said this, like when the student is prepared, the teacher arrives,
yes.
That kind of thing. I really believe the universe, doors start opening when you start turning knobs, you know?
And right.
It's like, and you're ready for this. This is great. But it takes a lot of balls because, you know, the comfortable patterns, like when we were on Rogan's show the other day, a couple of weeks ago, you said something that's really stuck with me, is how habits are like, they dig channels. It's like
runnels.
Through the desert. And every time it rains, the rain goes down that same channel and digs it a little deeper and a little deeper. And then sometimes it rains so much that it floods. And then you can, that's an opportunity for that channel, like the water can cut a new path now.
Yes.
And there are these moments in life, whether it's like some tragedy sometimes, someone close to you dies and it's like, fuck, what is life? What am I doing?
You get flooded
with emotion and you can change your life.
Yes.
You know, or you can just be dogged about it as you've been, like really self-reflective and just thinking things through over and over and over again. And, you know, gradually you're cutting yourself a new channel. It's great.
It's like dropping a suitcase filled with fucking vulture carcasses.
That's a heavy suitcase. You're not going to get that through security.
Because when you put, I mean, everyone's got different hang-ups, man. But it's like, this is one of the things I've heard Ram Dass say, which I love a lot, which is, wherever you're suffering, that's where there's the attachment. And man, I think in our culture, where many of us are suffering is sex. We are suffering when it comes to sex, and we're suffering in all these different ways, which is we're suffering because we're jealous. We're suffering because the way we've come to understand sex is something that it's either way more than it needs to be, or it's something where we're dehumanizing the people that we're having sex with, objectifying the people that we're having sex with, missing the connection with the people that we're having sex with, thinking of it in an angry way, or thinking of it more often, I think, in a numb way, when there is this essentially a reservoir of healing available through this form of human interaction. And because we're so fucking backwards in this particular way, we're bumbling when it comes, many of us are bumbling when it comes to sex.
Including people who have other parts of their lives really well managed.
Yes.
I mean, I think of someone like Tiger Woods. It's like, dude, how did you fuck that up? You're like this incredibly good-looking, rich, successful, smart guy.
Yeah.
You've got all the leverage to negotiate whatever it is you need. And you go into a relationship lying to the woman about right. who you are.
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Yeah.
You don't need to do that.
Because your mommy taught you that.
Because there's like a deep essential sense of shame probably that made him feel that he could not possibly be honest.
Yeah.
And think of how weird that is, that we go into the most intimate relationships of our lives lying about who we are. Like, that's like trying to get closer to something by walking away from it. It's never going to work.
Because what happens is because it's not just like this is a one-sided thing. It's like two people have been taught to lie to each other.
Yeah.
So it's like you. It's not just like one person's lying, the other person's honest. Quite often, both people have been taught early on, like, hey, you gotta lie about that.
Mommy won't love you.
Yeah. So you're lying to them. They're lying to you.
Yeah.
And the really sad thing is, the reason that you're lying is because you want love. You're not lying because you're trying to hurt them.
Right.
You're not lying because you want them to feel bad. You're not lying because you're lying to them because you want them in your life.
But think how funny it is that when it succeeds, by definition, it's a failure. Because you get the love, but you know that the person they're loving isn't really you. Because you've never let them see you. You know, it's like stealing clothing that you know won't fit you. Like, what is the fucking point, man? Yeah, and then you walk around with this big coat on that doesn't fit you. It's like, dude,
what do you do if you're 5 years into a relationship and you've been wearing the clothes of another man?
Yeah. I have a couple of friends that I've been hanging out with recently who are going to come on my podcast. I was just with them the other day. And it took them some time to decide to do it, but they want to do it, and they feel it's really important to do it. And but they're a couple who've been married. They've been together about 20 years, and you know, the first year or two was great, as it generally tends to be, and then the next like 8 or 9 years, I think, sucked. They were angry, resentful, just feeling trapped, not into it, really having a bad time. And then they got to the point, they got to a crisis point, and I don't remember who, one of them, I guess had been reading Dan Savage and, you know, saw this sort of more honest approach to things. And they talked about like, hey, this isn't working. Right. Like, we're at the end of the road here. So before we split up, what if we just try being totally honest with each other? And they did. And now it's like 8 years later and they're like high school sweethearts.
Wow.
They are so happy together and they love each other so much. They went through this incredible transformation together.
Yeah.
And now they have, I don't know if you call it an open relationship, but it's a relationship where other people are involved sometimes and in different capacities, and I'll let them tell their story. But that I think of them when somebody asks me a question like that. And that's not to say that particular medicine is always going to save the patient. Sometimes, you know, people are totally honest with each other and the conclusion's going to be, what, you know, we're wasting our fucking time here. I don't even like you.
Right.
You know? Or you need something that I just can't give, or you want to go down a road I don't want to go down.
Right.
But the thing is, that's all right. It's better to know that. The earlier you know that, the better.
And I don't want to go down Fisting Highway.
Exactly.
Hey, I'm looking at the map here.
Should we take the Fisting exit or not?
I think there's other ways to get there. We don't have to take the Fisting exit.
Yeah. I hear you. I mean, I don't want anyone pissing on me or shitting on me. I mean, everybody's got their limits, you know, or they're just their preferences. So I think, you know, and monogamy is a thing. A lot of people misunderstand me to be advocating non-monogamy all the time, which I'm not doing. All I'm advocating is what we're talking about honesty. Right now. Right. Lay your shit out on the table. Who are you? For real. What do you need? For real.
Yeah.
Now, this can change. 10 years from now, we're going to have this conversation again, right?
Yes.
You know, people's parents die, they have babies, they get sick, they lose their jobs. Shit changes.
Yeah.
And so this is always going to be renegotiated.
But right.
At least come at it from a point. I mean, I often say, like, if you know you're not monogamous, if you know in your heart that you cannot be happy with one other person for the rest of your life, to not mention that when you're getting into a relationship, to me, is, you know, like, ethically on a par with lying about whether or not you want to have kids.
Well, I think the problem, I love what you're saying, but I do think that there's a little bit of wiggle room here, which is that we don't know, maybe you know, but the human identity is pretty fluid.
Sure, especially when you're young.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's always going to be renegotiated.
Right.
But if you're hiding something that you know
right.
about yourself, you're shooting yourself in the foot and you're shooting the other person right in the face.
Yeah. Yeah, right. You're like putting your foot on their face and then, shooting your foot.
The ultimate fuck up. And then, like, you know, 10 years later, you got kids. And now you're going to have the real talk?
Yeah.
That's not cool, you know? But like they say, what's the Chinese thing? You know, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. Yeah. The second best time is today.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just got to start. I mean, it's all ego, too. That's the other thing. Like, so much of, like, monogamy that people pretend, again, when I say people, I mean me. I keep trying to put it off on other fucking people that I have pretended to myself that there is something, what's the word, noble or something in it, you know? And I'm tricking myself because the reality is I am being monogamous out of fear. I'm not being monogamous out of some noble, and I'm sure there is noble monogamy where it's like, this is, I want to decomplicate my life. I love you. I want to be with you. You want to decomplicate your life. Right now, we don't want other partners. We just want to, like, sort of form this bubble and build a thing inside of it, minus intrusions or complications or something like that. And it's not fear-based. So I know that that's real. But I know the way I've been doing it. And quite often, there's a secret sigh of relief inside of me when the girl I'm with is like, I'm just going to be with you. It's not like healthy that I'm wanting to do this. It's because I am too weak or have been too weak to bear the reality that I'm not going to satisfy a person completely just with me. That I'm not enough for one. What I'm saying is...
Yeah.
To put it in a less weird way, or even a more weird way, it's real hard for me. The reality of it is, the ego, my ego, cannot fucking stand, or in the past has had a great difficulty with the idea of someone that I'm having sex with and falling in love with sleeping with other people. It fucking drives me up the wall, man.
What is it about that drives you up the wall? You feel you're being compared and that you might, like, not win that comparison?
Okay, yeah. So it's... Yeah. To be honest, the sex part of it is less disastrous to me than imagining the guy that they're with saying something really funny and them laughing That fucking drives me nuts, dude.
That's great.
The jizz spraying onto them. The orgasms.
As long as they're not laughing.
That's
great.
This is all ego.
Yeah.
This is all ego, man. And it feels good to admit it. But it's like it's all ego. It's all embarrassing ego stuff. Because that's it. I'm not saying that like the actual sex part is like necessarily like warming my heart either. But if I'm having honestly, like if
you're ranking the offense, him being funny is worse than him having a 10-inch
if I'm having
dick.
To pick.
Yeah.
And someone's like, okay, what do you want? This guy's going to give your girlfriend an earth-shattering orgasm, or he's going to fucking make her laugh really hard, like all night, man. He's like really funny. He's going to crack her up over and over and over again. She's going to be laughing.
She's going to laugh so hard she squirts.
That. So, but again, if we follow it all the way down.
Yeah.
Inside of me, it's just insecurity. It's like a variety of different insecurities, all based on something that is easy to forget. And you know, one of the I read this thing, which is, I think it's Rumi says this, but I can't be sure about what's the antidote for jealousy. And I don't think he necessarily meant like the antidote for being jealous over a lover. He meant like someone succeeds and you're not. Mm. Someone's like ahead of you in whatever the game is. One of your rivals is like doing better than you, or you see many people. If this might surprise you, but many comedians, when their peers gain success, don't necessarily get happy about it.
You're a backbiting bunch of fuckers. I've been around enough comedians to see that.
So,
but good-hearted,
whoever the person is you're jealous of, remind yourself that person deserves love. Just like me, and that person's capable of love just like me. This is not some fucking ogre from the castle in a dark forest. This is a person who suffers like I do, who feels like I do, who deserves love like I do, who has friends like I do, who wakes up in the morning and feels good sometimes, wakes up in the morning and feels bad sometimes, worked hard, did dad struggles. That person is just like me. So the moment you sort of humanize the person that you're jealous of, it feels like, oh, wait, this person is getting something sweet here. And that has helped me with it a lot. Yeah. For me, it's been one of the big fucking bits of baggage.
Well, the way you framed it earlier, I sort of like I reacted a little bit that people couldn't see, but when you said that it's been hard for you to wrap your head around the idea that I'm not enough for her or something like that, I've always found that framing of it, as common as it is, to be unhelpful because what that does is it reinforces the idea that one person could be enough, that this whole concept of enough seems to be a problem for me. You know, it's like, I really love, you know, Thai food, and it's Thai food. There's so many flavors. That's why I love it. It's got so many flavors and so many interesting, but you know, do I want to eat Thai food every meal for the rest of my life? No. Does that mean Thai food isn't enough somehow? Is it inadequate somehow? No, it's that, by nature, I'm omnivorous, I'm intelligent, and part of the expression of my intelligence is to be attracted to novelty. And so I would, after I eat a bunch of Thai food, I want a pizza, and then I eat pizza, I want a salad. And it's like, that's just the way intelligence is. So it's not that any of those things are insufficient in any way, right? So for me, the key was, I mean, first getting that realization that the fact that she's attracted to someone else is in no way a reflection on me.
Right.
Has nothing to do with me.
Nothing to do with you.
Because I know when I'm with a woman who's like amazing, fantastic in every way, I'm still like, whoa, check her out. And the woman, like Casilda, one of the things that has made our relationship so great is that when a sexy woman walks by, if I'm reading the paper, Casilda will say like, hey, check this out. Like, don't miss this. You know, she's hot. You know, like, she wants me to see these women. She and I are a team in that sense. That sort of, like,
absolute not necessity for me to hide anything is what makes a partnership right. possible.
That's it, man. That's it.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm throwing up. I'm puking my demons out in front of you. That's it.
Not only in front of me, on me. I got Dunkin' demons all over my jeans.
I just got to purge these things out of me, man. It's because it's like the you can't. I guess. I think the universe kind of wants everything. Like you have to surrender or sacrifice. This is why in Buddhism. The cause of suffering is attachment.
Right, exactly.
And
yeah.
you got to let go. And when you hear it, you think, oh, that's so easy. Oh, I can let go of, you know, of that.
Just,
whatever.
Just don't grab it in the first place.
Yeah.
Like but, that frog story I told you in Portland.
Yes. But it's like, this is maybe the cheesiest, weirdest podcast I've ever done. I'm being very confessional. But it's like the... because I'm about to quote Meatloaf.
But, Paradise at the Dashboard Light.
No, that song. I would do anything for love.
Yeah.
That's a really cool song. Because it's like, I would do anything for love, but I won't do that. And it's, when I've heard that song
about fisting?
Well, that's what I used to think. I'm like, he must be talking about some kind of weird S&M shit or something. But I think really what that song is about is like how every single person says, I want to be a loving person and I want to give love. Maybe not everyone, but people who are like spiritual or meditating, we all are like, love is the most important thing. Love is the most important thing. Neem Karoli Baba says, love everyone and tell the truth. These are the essential components of like his teachings. Love everyone and tell the truth. Love, 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 love. And you think, oh yes, love, 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 love. I'm a loving person. I'm going to love, love, love until you do the wrong fucking thing, motherfucker. And then no more love for you.
Yeah.
And that is where the attachment is, right? This is the story of Jesus and the rich man. A rich man comes to Jesus and says, I want to follow you. And Jesus says, okay, just give everything you have to the poor and then let's do this. And the rich man is like, no, 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 I'm not going to do that. And this is the symbol. Because what happens is all of us have that one fucking thing. For some people, it might be something to do with something not to do with sex or relationships. Who knows? It might be just whatever the thing is you're clinging to. But eventually, for love, the ticket price for love is everything you're holding on to.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is. It's like going into a shop that you can't bring bags into. You got to eventually let it all go. And for me, letting go of the idea of being monogamous with people, the idea of letting someone be who they are with other people or not with other people, that is, for me, a very difficult thing to release. But now that I've been putting it down, and I'm not saying in my mind I don't go back and like take a look at the vulture suitcase and think, well, maybe we'll carry that for a few more miles. But now that I've put it down, I've never experienced the kind of relief from that, putting that shit down. It's fucking poison, man.
You know, the other thing that I think is really important, and maybe this is more an American thing, but other cultures have their own hang-ups to deal with. But, you know, we, and this is more true of younger people than us, but like you grow up with your sort of mental imagery of sex being through media, through porn and that, right?
Yeah.
And so what do we see in porn? We see women normally pretending to be incredibly like having a great time.
Yeah.
With dudes with like massive schlongs.
Yeah.
The reason they have massive schlongs.
That's actually, if you look at my porn search, that's the sentence I
women
put in.
Pretending with dudes with massive blogs. That'll bring up some good stuff.
.com. Yeah. Someone buy that domain name. What is it? Women pretending to have
women faking orgasms with dudes. Men with big dicks. Yeah.
.com.
And it's, you know, it's just like, you know, eliminating pubic hair and all this stuff. It's all for the camera. It's all for right. the needs of the media. The medium is the message, Marshall McLuhan, right? And so
So it's the what's interesting is we get this image, and so none of us in general have dicks like that. Very few guys have porn dicks. Those are, you know, one in a million dicks there. And so we all feel like inadequate. We're all imagining this stuff. And when you actually are intimate with women to the point where you can really talk about what's going on, very few women are size queens. I'm not saying they don't exist, but most size queens are gay guys.
Huh.
Because guys are into size. Guys right. are visual. What most women, and I realize I'm a man speaking for women here, and you know, some women will write and say, you're full of shit, but most women agree with me based upon my experience.
Is it anecdotal, or has anyone done studies on this?
Yeah, there are lots of studies on this. And I'll talk about them in a minute. But what most women are into is authenticity. So you're a real person. You're honest with her. Even if you're honest about the fact that you are attracted to other women or whatever, something difficult. But the fact that you're honest creates a sense that she can trust you, that there's not going to be a weird surprise coming out of left field,
right.
that you are who you say you are,
right.
that you don't have some weird hidden addiction that you're not telling her about. You're right. not going to go to Vegas and lose all the money gambling. You're not getting right. beat her up in some night when you come home drunk. You're not some fucking closeted lunatic.
Right.
You are honest and naked and intimate with her. That is an incredible turn on for women. Far beyond dicks or pecs or fucking, you know, whatever the rest of it is.
Nobody wants a liar with a big dick.
Well, very few people do. Exactly. And the people who do aren't worth your fucking time anyway.
Right.
Right. Let the liars with the big dick have them. Right. So what I'm saying is the thing that we're afraid of in terms of sex, she's going to have sex with another guy. Oh, he's got a bigger dick, or he's going to do this, or he's going to do that. It doesn't fucking matter. That's not, if a woman leaves you because a guy has a bigger dick or fucked her, let her go. You don't want her anyway. What you want is somebody who knows you and who values you. And once you have that connection with someone, all that other shit, who cares? I mean, are you going to leave somebody you love because some other woman has bigger tits? Fuck no. Of course not. But that's the same kind of thinking that we project onto the woman,
wow.
right?
Wow.
You know, sorry, baby, but I really want a blonde. I mean, you're not buying a fucking car. You know?
Nobody thinks like that.
Exactly.
And if you did think like that, you'd be
an idiot.
What are you? You're a sociopath or something.
But we do that. We project that our fears onto our partners thinking they think
that. Wow, Chris, that's crazy, man. That is so fucking nuts. Wow. It's all projection. It's all projection.
And I remember having this conversation with a woman that I had an open relationship with, and she was feeling insecure. I was seeing this other woman, and the other woman was hot or younger or whatever it was. And I remember, and she was like, well, you know, but I worry, like, maybe you'll fall in love and leave me.
Yeah.
And I was like, look, I've got you, who I love, who I know, who knows me, who we have history together.
Yeah.
We have so much richness. Plus, I get to go have sex with her or whatever I want. Never in a million years would I leave you.
Right.
This is the perfect situation.
Right.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, this is exactly
right.
where I want to be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I have love, I have intimacy, and I have novelty. Are you kidding?
Right.
The only reason I would ever leave is if something went wrong here between you and me. But I would never leave.
The reason you would leave is if someone was trying to lock you away from those other things.
That's it.
That is the thing that is of all the things that are going to push someone away. That is it.
Right.
Because you're trying to basically put a crimp in the garden hose connected to the source. You're right. trying. This is a precious. This is a human incarnation you have here. But I'm going to try to keep you from all these beautiful experiences. It's demonic. I mean, and
it's like saying, give me your passport. You love me? Give me your passport.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I don't want you to leave the country unless I'm with you.
Oh, my God.
What the fuck is that? Yeah. Yeah, it's I don't know. I lost my train of thought.
Well, I mean, I think that you like that's pretty much the It's interesting to me, by the way, and we do have to cover something. We're 55 minutes in. I know you got to go put a tarp on.
No, don't worry about it.
But it's really curious to me. You've written this book. You've got this new book coming out. But it's really curious to me that you haven't written a book. You've written Sex at Dawn, which is kind of like an anthropological approach to monogamy. But it's really curious to me that you haven't just written a book about sex. That you haven't just written a book about like this kind of stuff that you're talking about.
You know, Neil Strauss, who wrote The Game, he's a good friend of mine. And a lot of people think because of The Game and the reputation The Game has, they have a negative sense of him.
That's true.
But people who've met him don't generally, because he's a really thoughtful, he's a really beautiful guy. I thought I'd hate him, actually. I refused to be on his podcast. It's the first podcast I ever refused to be on. Long story. But anyway, we've become friends. And he has been encouraging me to write a sexual memoir because he thinks that it would be very helpful, because I was the dorky teenage guy, hung up and, you know, went through sort of a, in some ways, a typical progression, but I think I just took it further. And I've been thinking about it because it would be fun to write. And it wouldn't be like, hey, check out all these chicks I banged. It's not that kind of memoir. It's more like it would be really honest, so it would be hard to write because some shit's embarrassing, as, you know, we're talking about today.
Yes.
It's not easy, like, figuring this shit out. There's a lot of hang-ups you have to face. Yeah. But that's the value of it, that, like, what you're doing right now, sharing this with your audience, there's a lot of value in that because there are a lot of people out there saying, fuck, I hear that. That's me. I'm going through that. Or I'm afraid to even look at that shit, you know?
Right.
So I might do it. But what happened was, after Sex at Dawn, I talked to several agents and they were all like, okay, because I had this idea for a follow-up book that was about sex. And they were all like, look, if you write another sex book, you're going to be the sex guy. So you should write a book that's not about sex, and then you'll be an idea guy. And then you can write about anything you want. And including sex in the future, but two sex books in a row, that sort of is going to pigeonhole
you. Hey, Picasso, you better stop these painting stuff, man, or people are going to think you're a painting guy. Why don't you start sculpting?
I know. I got to tell you, I look back and I'm like, I understand where they were coming from, but given the reality of who I am, I probably should have just written the sex book. Because another big idea book.
You know, speaking of Picasso, I saw this cheesy quote in front of a Starbucks, which is, the purpose of life is to discover your gift. The meaning of life is to give your gift away. That's Picasso. Which, when I saw it, I was walking, I'm like, that's fucking beautiful. And then I'm like, wait, how much is a fucking Picasso
painting? That's what I'm thinking. Hey, give me one of those paintings, Pablo. Yeah.
But yeah, but you know, that's sort of like, because the thing that you're talking about, which is sadly for many of us, there is a very rare moment that happens where you're sitting in your own life and you realize, this is exactly where I want to be.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't get that feeling. You might get it as a kid, but that feeling starts going away. And that feeling starts going away the moment you start lying.
Yeah.
And if you're lucky enough that you get back into the place that you want to be, and you feel that again, that's the Garden of Eden.
Yeah.
That's the Garden of Eden. And I'll tell you, getting kicked out of the Garden of Eden in the Bible, a lot of people say, oh, I'm going to kill that dog. A lot of people say, it started with eating the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil. But really, there's an interrogation that happens between God and Adam and Eve, and there's a lie that happens in there.
Mm.
There's a lie, because they'd started wearing clothes, and he's like, "What? Why'd you start wearing clothes?" Mm. But they lied. They were like trying to trick him, to deceive him. It started off as like trying to deceive God. It starts with a lie. It starts with a little lie.
Yeah, everything does.
Yeah, and so once you find yourself in that spot, man.
You ever heard of Brad Blanton?
No, I have not.
He's the father of Carsey Blanton, who is a singer-songwriter who I use her song on my podcast, Smoke Alarm. She's fantastic. CarseyBlanton.com. Check her out. She's really cool. She just wrote a very interesting piece about this whole Me Too movement and the sort of dangers in what's going on. Anyway, her father is a psychologist who wrote a book called Radical Honesty. And his belief is that all our problems start from a lie, that we lie to ourselves, we lie to each other. Yeah. If we can eliminate that, our lives will be much better. And so he's been living this radical honesty for, I don't know, 50 years or something, does workshops. He ran for Congress in Virginia and won 25% of the vote with no party affiliation.
Wow.
Imagine that. And wow. Yeah. The Democrats were going to have him on their ticket, but they, at the last minute, they refused because he does these workshops where these radical honesty workshops, and there's one day in the workshop where everyone takes their clothes off and sits naked in a circle. Wow. And talks about their bodies and what scares them and freaks them out about their bodies.
Fuck,
and that's what
intense.
The Democrats freaked out about.
No
can't
way.
Can't have that. Can't have our candidate associated with nudity.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a great thing online. I'd recommend it to everybody on YouTube. It's 10 minutes long. It's This American Life, Brad Blanton. It's a video about his congressional campaign.
Wow.
It's so cool. It starts off this, he's sitting on a stool, you know, gray background, and the journalist says, so I can ask you anything? And he says, yeah, shoot. She says, have you ever had sex with anyone other than your partner? Have you ever had adultery, committed adultery? And he says, Oh my, yes. Oh, I've had sex with over 1,000 women, and I've had probably about a dozen homosexual experiences. I've had herpes. I've had gonorrhea 3 or 4 times. I've been involved in several abortions. And he just fucking lays it out. And he's not bragging. It's just like, yeah, matter of fact.
Here it is.
Here's the truth. You want the truth? Yeah. Here's the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very interesting
wow
guy. Yeah, I want to have him on the podcast, but you know, I got to get to Virginia to do it. But yeah, he's a fascinating dude. And that whole idea, I mean, it's really funny because they interview some of the women who are working in his campaign, and they're like, you know, she's like, well, I've been working with Brad for 30 years. And the journalist says, so do you think he'd be a good congressman? No, not really.
That's hilarious.
It's really good.
That's yeah, so funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know about radical honesty. I try to be, you know, 95% honest, but I give myself a waiver where I really think honesty would cause totally unnecessary pain to somebody.
Well, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine. We're having this like conversation about the term absolution, right? Forgiveness, like a kind of Catholic form of forgiveness, right? And so I was looking it up, and well, basically the idea is like of confession, but it's not just confession. It's in Buddhism too. And it's like the honesty thing that you're talking about. Yes. But who we are that honest with, it doesn't have to be everybody.
Right.
And so this is where a structure emerges, where you have an elder, a teacher, a confidant, a trusted friend, a truly trusted lover who you go to and you say, here's what is happening. And you tell them the thing, you know? And that's and that person absolves you. The person, like, here's what you're saying. And I do. I have teachers like that. Like my teacher, Raghu Marcus. I get on the phone with him and I'll tell him everything. And what's beautiful about it is the way he absolves me is not to do some, like, voodoo. Is he's like, ugh. Well, let me tell you what I did, you know, or he'll tell me something that in his life that like reflects what I'm going through. And from that, we learn, okay, gotcha. We're all struggling here. Like it's, and that to me is like, that feels like absolution in some way. Like it's a relief because you begin to realize like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, this is sometimes when I go see Doug Stanhope perform, when I've seen him perform. In a weird way, I feel absolved just from the act of watching his comedy.
Yeah.
Because he's so fucking honest.
Yeah.
And in the stuff that he's like revealing in a really comedic way is like abhorrent, you know? But in the act of like being up there fully himself, and not doing it with some fucking schlocky thing like, let me heal you with my truth. It's just like his art in its, just by its very existence, is healing people. Whether he would want me to say that or agree with that, I don't know. I just know that from watching him perform, I have experienced that in my own right.
Yeah, I agree. I feel the same way.
And I think that's I think this kind of honesty is great, but it's like you don't have to necessarily go out with a fucking bullhorn and announce every single rotten fucking thing that you think you've done or your hangups.
Or tell your 4-year-old that he's going to die. Hey, kid, hope you're enjoying it because you're going to be dead in 80 years. Just being honest.
Enjoying that applesauce, motherfucker.
Slurp it up now. Your days are numbered. Yeah.
So there's an artfulness to it and a gracefulness to it. But I think the beginning part of it is instead of worrying about being honest with your lover or being honest with your friends or being honest with the world, how about just start being honest with yourself?
Right.
And the thing that you talked about earlier, which is like, there are things that people don't even want to look at in themselves. They don't even want to look at it. And this is why I think meditation and a spiritual practice is really important, because the act of sitting still and breathing, or maybe the act of like sacramentally taking psychedelics, or the act of like doing anything that gets you to look just underneath the identity, begins to show you stuff. Because there might be things you're avoiding looking at. It's not even that you're avoiding looking at. You don't even know they're fucking there.
Yeah.
There might be tentacles down in that basement, man, that you're not even aware of. And so that's the beginning part. Just start being honest with yourself. And I think that part starts with a very simple question. Am I happy? And hear what your heart says back. And if the answer is no, don't freak out. Don't freak out. Don't feel ashamed. Don't be like, oh my God, what's wrong with me that I'm not happy? Just that's the beginning part. Don't even try. You don't even have to figure out why you're not happy at that moment. Just admit to yourself, you know what? I'm not happy.
And by happy, I think it's important, and I don't mean to speak for you, but I think it's important that by happy, we don't mean big smile on your face, singing and skipping down the street every day.
No.
You can be going through a really hard time and still be feeling that there's meaning in your life, that you're moving in the right direction, that you're not taking up space. You know, you're here, you're fulfilling your purpose. And that sense of happiness, like I'm in alignment with my path. I'm on my path. There's this great quote I always think of from one of the Carlos Castaneda books, where the Don Juan character says it in Spanish, but it's like, he says, you know, I'm always moving on the path. I'm always on the path. It doesn't matter which path, as long as it's a path with heart. You know, and it's true. It doesn't matter which direction you're going. You're going uphill, downhill. As long as it's a path with heart.
Yeah.
Then you know you're okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a very important point to make, because, happy, when I say happy, I mean that thing you were talking about when you were talking to this lover that you had who was worried over you leaving her. And when you're saying, look at this beautiful situation that we're in here, I'm fully myself with you.
Right.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
And before you can be fully yourself with some lover, you have to be fully yourself with you.
Right.
And it doesn't, happiness definitely doesn't mean some ridiculous, like, smiling at strangers, skipping down the sidewalk thing. No, it's a deeper thing than that. It's like being in tune, synced up.
Yeah.
Even if you are synced up with your own suffering, even if it means being synced up with your pain.
Right.
You know,
suffering can be really meaningful.
Yes. Yeah, you
and
can
it,
be.
It tends to be if you're open to it. And it's such a waste if all that suffering, you have to go through all that suffering and not even get the meaning out of it, you know?
Yes.
It's like eating fantastic food that you can't digest or something.
Yeah, man. It really is. It's like getting letters. It's essentially like getting letters from God that you're not opening.
Right.
That's what your suffering is. Yeah. And the moment you start opening those letters and reading them, you'll be amazed to find out they're love letters. Mm. They're not letters of you being a horrible person. They're not letters of like your sins. They're letters of like, I miss you.
They're letters of forgiveness.
Yeah.
It's a good way to put it. You're a poetic motherfucker.
You are too, man. You are hey, too.
Are you the person who introduced me to Bruce Damer?
I don't know.
Because
I
mean, I've been in touch with him, trying to do a podcast with him for a year and a half or 2 years, and I just did it last week. I went to his place near Santa Cruz.
I saw that.
What a beautiful dude.
Oh, my God.
And at the end of it, he was showing me around his Timothy Leary collection and all that, and he talked about doing a thing with you. And who's the, like, the funny yogi, the... Who like does the fake yogi shit and the vegetarian holier than thou? He's a comedian. He's a big YouTube guy. You know, JP Sears.
Oh yeah, JP Sears. I think. Yeah.
The three of you did something, and I was like, you know, Duncan. And then it occurred to me, fuck, I think Duncan is the guy who first suggested.
I didn't do something with him. And JP Sears. What he had me do, which is really funny. You guys have heard Bruce Damer. He's been on my podcast. But Bruce Damer gave a talk at Burning Man because he's discovered – he's got this theory on the origin of life, which is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
So he gives this incredible –
this guy consults with NASA. Does, you know, he's on the committee to choose the landing site for the next Mars mission. He's a fucking genius.
So what he had me do at Burning Man, which was the weirdest thing ever, and it was funny and weird, is he was giving this talk – and on the origin of life, and he brought me up in the middle of the talk because to give a quick announcement to burners about how I was doing a tax seminar.
That's right.
I was trying to do this
public service announcement.
Hey guys, I know a lot of you are probably having problems with your taxes.
That was his idea?
Yeah.
The tax thing?
Yeah. And yes, he's hilarious. He's such a little chaos magician.
Yeah.
So I do this like weird tax thing. He makes the funniest joke of the whole thing. The people in the room are looking at me like, what the fuck is happening? Yeah, Damer is a real amazing human.
Have you been to his place?
I haven't been to his place yet.
You got to go up. We'll jump in the van one day and go up there. He's having a birthday party soon.
When? Anyway, you can tell me.
In a week or two. I'll send you the email.
I'd be way into that.
Yeah.
That'd be so fun, Chris. So
it's right down the street from, it's like two doors from where, who wrote One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
Ken Kesey
lived.
No shit.
Yeah, it's a very beautiful place in the Redwoods.
Wow.
Very special place.
Well, that's where we'll head next. That's our next adventure,
Road
Chris.
Trip!
Dr. Ryan, thank you so much for being on the show, man.
Oh, yeah.
You are such a wonderful human.
Anytime, brother.
I'm so grateful to have you in my life.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you for listening, pals. That was Dr. Chris Ryan. Definitely check out his podcast, Tangentially Speaking, or read his book, Sex at Dawn. Much thanks to HelloFresh for sponsoring this episode. Remember, HelloFresh.com, Duncan30. And don't forget to sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/DTFH. My sweet babies, I love you so much. Thank you for continuing to listen to this podcast. I'll see you real soon. Hare Krishna.